RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. We're your weekly source for performance information. Thanks for tuning in today. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, do get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Subscribe to our newsletter. Get our podcast at CrushPerformance.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And for all other social media platforms, Instagram, our YouTube channel, and Facebook, just search out Crush Performance. Well, here we are. Midwinter. And on the other side of the NFL Super Bowl, what did you think of the game? Well, I think the opinions are loud and clear across the major media platforms, for sure. I don't know if I necessarily agree with everything that's being said. I watched the game with a group of very close friends. It was a great time, as usual, the Super Bowl usually is. But I just took a step back after the game was over and sort of thought about this season, as we do every year. We like to look back on the season that was, but at the start of every season, we like to anticipate and predict and name the teams and players and stories that we're following as the season gets underway. And if we look back to the start of this NFL season, I was sort of contemplating which teams did we think we should follow this year, which players, which storylines, and did they pan out to be what we thought they were? Well, getting back to it, the teams that we thought we should follow at the start of this NFL season, the Browns were our number one team to watch. And simply because, well, it's the Browns. How could a team be worse? Could they get any worse? And what would they do despite all the effort and people and changes that they're making? What would they do to get better? And did they get better? Well, they finished the season 7-8, the most successful season in a long time. And I think if you break it down looking at the data, it's one of the most successful turnarounds we've seen in recent history, for sure. But they still have a long, long way to go. Still a team to watch coming up. We also had the Eagles on our radar to watch, see if they could repeat. Didn't quite happen for them. Injuries this year, I think, are one of the reasons. But we'll look back and analyze their season more to try to understand why weren't they quite as successful as everybody thought they'd be in this repeat season. And is there things to learn there? One of the other teams that we had at the top of our list, top five, top six to watch, were the Raiders. Of course, the move coming, Gruden, the big contract for the head coach. They finished 4-12. Moving to Vegas, it's a pretty exciting time for that organization. They have a ton of work to do as well. I honestly thought they'd be better. I'm not sure if the diehard NFL analysts are happy with the Raiders' performance, but a 4-12 finish on the season I don't think was quite what they were looking for. That being said, we'll see how they transition through this offseason. Again, it never ends. But two teams that were in our top five to watch, and I think rightfully so, the Rams, of course, for Sean McVay, young coach, some of the big moves they made last offseason, they're really making a charge for it, and man, did they deliver with an incredible season, 13-3 overall. But man, they came out all guns firing. It's too bad they couldn't execute in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure what happened here. And this will be one to analyze and think about and talk about for a long time coming. A lot to learn about. And if you hear the post-Super Bowl interviews, McVay, I love this guy, man. I like his energy. I like how he motivates that team. But he flat out said, look, he was outcoached. Outcoached, and man, it looked like it. It looked like it. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how that helps Sean McVay develop as a young coach in the NFL as well. You know, if you looked across the field to the seasoned veteran, one of the most successful coaches in the history of the game now in terms of championships, one of only three coaches in the 99-year history of the NFL to have six Super Bowl victories, six championships. Belichick, he is truly, truly a master. Love him or hate him. Lots of opinions out there. I tend to love him to death simply because of the way he operates. I like how he talks to the media. I like how he guards his people and protects his people. I like how he sets that culture and really, really defines what that team is all about. And I like, you know, when you get him in a private conversation, you know, that we've seen, you can go online and see them when he's away from the game and away from the team and a little bit of downtime. I like how he talks. I like how he talks about how deep it really can be if you're going to be passionate and be really, really good at something, what it takes. I also like how he sort of sets the guidelines for performance in the game. So, of course, the Patriots were one of our teams to watch, as were the Rams. And, you know, if we're going into the playoffs, I think we had the best teams in the game in the playoffs. Unfortunately, I think we need to also do something about the tiebreaker in the NFL. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But another thing I'd like to see, just in hindsight here, coming hot off the Super Bowl, post-game, here's my suggestion to the NFL right now. Okay, these opportunities are just so rare. Guys have played the game. So many players have played the game and never had a chance to really forget about competing, just competing in a Super Bowl, but sit back and enjoy a championship victory. We need to absolutely ban the media from the field after the game, at least for a period of time. Give the players 30 minutes just to celebrate as a team. Go shake the hands of their opponents and just be together to bask in the glory of the championship. Frankly, I'm telling you what, the media totally destroyed, for me personally, the post-game celebration. Brady especially. What a freaking circus. And I think, you know, that would be a worthy change. I mean, it really, really would be. If you look what happens in the NHL, Major League Baseball could probably follow suit a little bit. But, I mean, give the players their time with the coaches. And then, hey, man, then get with the media and get with the fans and celebrate with everybody. But those guys need to celebrate. That's one strong request I would have right now. Because that post-game celebration, even if you aren't a Patriots fan, man, it's such a special thing to see. And I wish that was a little more open for the players, players only. So anyway, I just a side thought there, a little sidebar. But the game, of course, lackluster, we all know that. But I think there's a lot to learn from this season in the NFL and certainly these playoffs as well. Brady, 41, another reason to watch. Six rings, we know what that's about. One of the most successful quarterbacks in history. But why is that? Why is he so successful? I'm telling you what, this is a team effort. And the Patriots are one of those teams, and we've talked about this a few times on the show. They're one of those teams that just has the formula right. You know, dynasties are built on great players like Brady and Gronkowski and, you know, that all-star lineup. But sustained greatness is built on the players that make it happen on a day-to-day basis. If you look at the offensive line, and I've said this, I think, for the last 5 years, for sure 5 years ago, we had a conversation about the offensive line for the Patriots. I don't know if you know this, but they only allowed one sack in the playoffs, and I'm telling you right now, I can guarantee to everybody who hears this podcast, those guys want that sack back. They want it back. The O-line is such a big, big part of the game, and the Patriots have that formula down. They are serious about their work, and they're really, really good at what they do. And it's funny, you know, if you break down the intelligence of players, there was a study a few years ago that actually looked at the intelligence of football players. And the question sort of was, hey, what's the most, what position has the most intelligent players? And I don't know, you know, I can't really remember what it was all about. We'll find it and talk about it more. But, you know, they were talking about IQ, I believe, and, you know, where these players come from. But the offensive line, in this one study, it was said that the offensive line are the most intelligent players on the field next to the quarterback. It has a lot to do, of course, with the plays and what they do, working as a unit. But I get it. I totally do. And, you know, working in pro football myself, I have total respect for the O-line. And though you love working with every player, from special teams to the outside to the inside of the game, the offensive line for me is a real, real special unit of players to work with. You have to train them totally differently. if you look at where they operate and how they need to move, you can really hone in on what they need to do. These guys got to be big. They got to be strong. They got to be powerful, agile, and quick as lightning. That's a pretty special thing. I have nothing but respect for the offensive linemen in the NFL or any pro league for that matter, because they're special guys, big giants. And of course, we care for them as much off the field as we do on the field. And post-career, we do spend a lot of time with our offensive linemen managing their weight and their health, because that is a brutal, brutal position to play for sure. The defensive guys as well on the other side of the line, the defensive guys are as special. We can train them. But I just got this little soft spot in my heart for the offensive linemen. Really special and fun to train as well. But watching the Patriots, if you just sit back and watch that offensive line, go back, watch the game. I encourage you to do it. Even if you're just a casual fan of football, or maybe you don't even like football, here's what I'm going to encourage you to do. Even if, let's say, you run a business where you have frontline customer service people, and then you have backline warehouse guys or maintenance guys or service people behind the scenes, you have all these units working inside of your organization. Go and watch from a bird's eye view the New England Patriots operate from special teams, offense to defense, and inside of those three units, they're the subunits, the offensive line. Watch their defense, watch their wide receivers, their running backs, and then watch, of course, the quarterback. Watch them operate independently, but all working towards a goal. And that's something that I think, Sean McVay was talking about in his post-Super Bowl interview, that this team is pretty special. And of course they are. If you look at the success they have, listen, everybody, there's a lot to learn from these teams. Whether you're running a business, whether you're working with developing athletes, whether you're running a school, or if you're just running a household, or if you're just a fan. If you're just a fan, so much to watch, and I just love it. And we know the issues that football is facing in terms of concussion. We know that high school participation is down 5 or 6% since 2008 because of the injuries and the concussion. I think we're getting around that now, what we know about managing these injuries and helping athletes play safe. It's really come a long ways. I think we're going to see a lot of very, very interesting things happen here in the next few years, especially at the developmental levels, the little grassroots entry levels. We have to change the game. We don't need contact down there. I'm going to put it out there right now. I'll say it again, and this is a conversation we're going to have again as we get into the NFL offseason or the football offseason. We don't need contact for kids. Let's teach them the fundamentals of the game. Let's get them playing and loving the game, and then add contact when their bodies and their brains can handle it. Whew. You want to turn this game around, NFL? Start initiating or supporting changes at the grassroots level, just like we're doing in baseball, just like they've done in hockey, and just like they're doing in soccer. It's got to happen. It's got to happen right now. If you look at the pro guys, and we're going to analyze this offseason, pretty special to see the losing coach and the respect he has, of course, for that team that's been so successful over time. And even in a pretty flat, boring game, there's a lot to take away. So, when you look at the Patriots, there are things to learn here. And of course, one of the things we really focus on is, how do they do what they do? Well, we know they have their superstars for sure, but if there's one thing that the Patriots might do better than anybody in the game, maybe in the history of the game, is they find talent where nobody else can, and they develop talent. That's why I love watching the Patriots. I'm not going to say they're my great favorite team to watch. I don't have a Patriots jersey, but I love watching these guys operate, and I love to see what they do. The MVP says it all. Julian Edelman, MVP of the Super Bowl. Listen, here's a guy that many, many people said would never play in the NFL. Here he is, years and years and years later, with a Super Bowl MVP. You got to be kidding me. This is what the Patriots do. They find talent where nobody else is looking. And they don't just find it. They see it. It's like they have a crystal ball. And they can look into this crystal ball and see, hey man, we can turn this guy into that. Or we can turn that guy into this. And they do it. I tell you, if there was a big takeaway for other NFL teams, when you look and break down the Patriots, that would be my number one thing to suggest. Look at the players in that roster and analyze where they're coming from. Yes, they've got the superstars, and rightfully so. They need them. But again, the dynasties are built on those great players, but sustainability is built on the everyday guys that fill the holes. And the Patriots are the masters at that, and they're showing no signs of stopping. The Patriots will be on our top team to watch list in the NFL for the next 5 to 10 years. I guarantee it. Even without Brady, even more so when Brady and Belichick decide to move on, retire, or do whatever it is they're going to do here, it'll be really, really interesting to see if they've gone through a succession plan, if they're going to set this organization up for success. Because we know the ownership is rock solid, and we know that group is tight. If there's one thing we know about sustained success, it's consistency. Consistency of not only the players, but ownership and the leadership group, which is the coaches and the key players inside of that core. The greatest teams in any sport have that consistency. The revolving door, the changing coaches, the ownership, the sales, the free agent signings, the cleaning house, the rebuilding phases. You don't see that. You just see a constant attack at greatness with the Patriots. Love them. And whether you love them or hate them, you got to respect them because of what they're all about. So all of that being said, coming up after the break, let's get into the development side of the game. Let's talk about this for a second. I've had a chance to do some really cool things in the new year. 2019 has been a fantastic year at Crush Performance so far. We spoke at winter meetings in Vegas, Major League Baseball winter meetings. Huge honor. It was very insightful and very informative, and we've got a lot of takeaways there. I was over speaking at a high-performance coaching conference in Ottawa. I was just down in Curacao helping Major League Baseball build their high-performance program for the young up-and-coming players in that country. I'm off to Brazil here, and I'll be speaking at a big, big coaching conference in Vancouver. And we just got back from speaking at the ABCA, the American Baseball Coaches Association conference. First one I've been to, 7,000 coaches, baseball coaches from around the world, in Dallas, and it was a fantastic event. And as I sat there and looked at all of these coaches, it kind of dawned on me that, you know, if we got every coach in this room thinking certain things, we could change a game, whether it's baseball, football. If we get that kind of coach, that many coaches together, you can change a game in an instant. Let's talk about that right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance. Thanks for sticking around. Jeff Crushell here. We're your weekly source for performance information. Again, questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us. crushperformance.com is the website. And if you have a topic or something you'd like us to investigate, let us know. Listen, we answer every single question, email, text, direct message that we get. And some of the ideas are so fantastic and so intriguing that we've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to those ideas coming from you guys, our listeners. So let us know. And of course, if we don't have the answer to a question that you have, I can guarantee to you that we know somebody who does. So we love everyone we get, and that's why we're here, to help you guys out. So if you do have a topic, question, or smart remark, even get to us, crushperformance.com. Again, subscribe to our newsletter, get our podcast, share it with everybody you know, because we're here to help you get better and tap into your potential each week. Today, coming off the Super Bowl, talking a little bit about successful cultures, so much to learn from the Rams, of course, and from the Patriots, but also the NFL teams in general. You know, who's successful, who's not. Again, we talk about the teams that we were watching this year. The Browns, very, very interesting to watch, of course. The team couldn't get worse, or could they? That was the big question at the start of the year. And no, they turned it around at least a little bit. It was actually a fairly big swing for them, if you look where they came from, 7-8 this year. And hopefully they will continue that charge. I'd love to see the Browns really compete for a playoff spot, and one day, wouldn't it be fantastic to talk about the Browns heading into the Super Bowl? That's a tall, tall, tall order, but you never know. The Eagles, Raiders, of course, teams to watch. There were others, but we had the Rams and the Patriots, of course, in our top five teams to watch this year, rightfully so, and man, did they deliver. I don't think they delivered in terms of spectacular performances in the Super Bowl, but all in all, it was a great game to watch. The defense was good, and the punters were good. I mean, there's a takeaway for you. The punters were great. But, you know, if we talk about the game of football or what it takes to be great, one of the big takeaways that I think I have is, of course, the MVP for the Super Bowl. The Patriots Julian Edelman. That is just a great story. And it really does sort of show one of the main reasons the Patriots are so, so successful year after year. It's not so much because of the superstars that they have, and they're very important, don't get me wrong, but it's the cast of characters that surround those superstars and how the Patriots go about identifying, bringing in, and developing talent to support what the team needs to do. They had a turnover, about a third of their roster turned over last year, and yet here they are again, playing the same type of game, same type of systems, with the same core of superstar players, delivering the victory once again. It's a fascinating, real-time, real-life experiment going on. And there's so much to learn from these guys. And that got us thinking about the whole concept of development. You know, I had the great honor to speak at winter meetings this year. And it was fantastic to be there to talk about recovery and regeneration and athlete management to all the teams in Major League Baseball. And, you know, there's so many ways you can go about it. There's no one clear-cut way. There are principles, however. There are principles you have to follow, core principles. And, you know, one of the big changes we're seeing, you know, this is a topic that we had in our talk conversation with Major League Baseball, was how we have to keep up with relevant new science and how we have to be okay abandoning what we've done in the past if we find a better way to do it. A classic example of this is icing. We no longer ice to manage injuries and enhance recovery. It's just been proven time and time again, and to the point where it's irrefutable that icing can be even counterproductive to recovery from injury and recovery from practice or competition. So, you know, how we rethink the concept of icing applies kind of to almost every facet of human development. We need to constantly be on the edge of the research, but we also have to be cautious about the research as well. And I guess I mean by that is, you know, you can see all these numbers in the research and the science, but you sometimes have to make sure you understand the context they're in. For example, earlier this year, it was sort of announced through a number of different platforms talking about the dropout rates in organized sport. And this came about with a conversation of childhood obesity and inactivity and gaming. And we're going to do a whole show on gaming. I think gaming can be great if it's put into context and managed properly. But, you know, why kids aren't playing sport anymore? And so we did a great show in 2018 on why kids play. And one of the stats was the fact that the dropout rates in organized sport through, you know, the ages of 13, 14, and 15, 12, 13, 14 in that age group, the dropout rates are as high as 70%. Some of the highest recorded dropout rates in organized sport in the history of sport. And we're going, okay, that's very, very concerning. But when you step back and look at those numbers, a couple of things you have to understand. Could those numbers reflect kids who are changing sports? Maybe they drop out of baseball because they want to play volleyball. Or maybe they're quitting basketball because they want to go into swimming. Or is it because that's a critical age for kids to start deciding where they're going to focus their efforts? School gets a little more serious. Kids start thinking about their futures a little bit. And frankly, sports starts getting expensive. So maybe the parents are saying, okay, look, we can't do it all anymore. So let's pick and choose what we're going to do. So are kids now just narrowing their focus from maybe playing two or three annual sports to two? Or are they at a level where, hey, man, I love baseball. I love hockey. I'm going to dedicate most of my time to hockey, and I'm going to get into a summer conditioning program, and I'm going to just play those other sports for fun with my pals. Well, that's not really clear in the research as well. So when you hear all these numbers coming out of scientific research, you got to be careful how you take them into context. But regardless, talking about this dropout rates in sport, there's a trend there. And whether that 70% is accurate or not, whatever it is, it's an indication that we have a massive problem. And one thing that we always say inside of our organization, the Crush Performance and all of our programs, whether we're working with an individual athlete or whether we're helping an organization get their performance programs together, a problem accurately defined is already partially solved. You cannot fix a problem unless you clearly understand the problem in the first place. It's very, very difficult. And I think it's something that happens all too often. We go into fixing all these things that are wrong without really understanding what the issue is. Here's a really prime example. You know, coming off the Super Bowl, if we look at what's happening, we know that the concussions are a huge issue in the NFL and football in general, right from the grassroots, right up to the professional levels, because of now what we know when it comes to brain injuries. We have more knowledge about brain injuries, and it's led to a better understanding of how the brain actually works than we've ever had in the history of medical science or sports science, in the history of science. So there's a real, real upside to this, because we're now able to not only understand the injuries and the long-term impacts of the injuries better, we're now able to assess and handle them better when they happen. Really, really important work. So the numbers that we've had typically when it comes to concussions and dropout rates and all the, I don't want to say the fears that we had, but rightfully so, the fears that we had, those numbers are almost non-existent anymore because the landscape has changed. You know, we talk about the attendance and participation in grassroots football being down almost 5 or 6% from 2008, a large part due to the worries about the long-term impact of multiple sub-threshold head contacts. So we've understood all of this now. But one of the things that's happened is we changed the rules in the game to protect the players, rightfully so. Anything we can do to protect player health, athlete health, has to be seriously considered and implemented to the best of our ability. There's no doubt about that. But one of the things that's happened in the NFL, if you look at the injury trends over this last year even, so the number of concussions and serious head injuries are down because of the spearing rules, helmet-to-helmet contact rules. So the players are now tackling different. But if you look at the lower body injuries that we're now seeing, the numbers have skyrocketed because what's happened, the rules have changed the nature of the game. And maybe that's something that we didn't anticipate, or the rulemakers didn't anticipate. Trying to do the right thing in protecting the players from head injuries, we've caused maybe a different type of major issue and concern. And it is, it's major. You look at the numbers of lower body injuries this year. Is that the exact reason why? Well, we've got to analyze this a little bit more, but that's the thinking right now. The changes in helmet to helmet and the changes in the rules to protect the players from head injuries is now causing injuries at a high, high rate in a different way. So there's give and take. You have to be careful how you analyze and implement things. And that takes us sort of back to the idea of, you know, why are kids dropping out of sport? Well, we've got to understand that for sure. And so we had a great conversation with Amanda Visick from George Washington University last year. And this is one of my favorite conversations of the year. We looked at her work called Fun Maps, Why Kids Play. If you want to understand why kids are dropping out of sport, maybe we should seriously look at why they play in the first place. And if I were to ask you right now, if you were just to take a second and contemplate, just stop what you're doing, take a breath and just maybe think to yourself, what are the top three reasons you played sport as a kid? Whether you loved it, whether you were a jock, whether you just played for fun, why did you play? And maybe it wasn't even organized sport. Just maybe stop and think to yourself just for a second. Why did I play sport? Well, I can tell you right now, for me, I loved it. I loved the competition. I loved getting out with my pals. I loved putting plays together. I can't remember winning or losing so much, but I remember playing with my buddies. And I remember banding together, you know, in the yellow and black jerseys of Lanaria, Alberta, you know, fighting the big townships of Barrhead and Westlock. I grew up in a little farming community, right? So we'd go off and play the towns, and these towns aren't big either. They're like 3,000-4,000 people. That's the big town, man. You know, we're going out to play these kids, and it was epic battles. The jerseys were different colors, and we played for our home team and our communities. Man, it was fun. Listen, it was fun. And I remember being in the yard outside, mom screaming at it, me and my brother to get in, it's dinner time, get in, do homework. Forget homework, by the way. If you were to see my transcripts from junior high or even high school, not too impressive. But, man, we could play some sports. We could really play some sports. But why did you play? Why did you play? Well, Amanda Visick and her group did the first real major study that I really appreciated as to why kids play sport. And they looked at a bunch of kids, thousands, tens of thousands of kids, and they surveyed them why they played. And if you answered winning as maybe the top reason why kids play sport right now, you'd be sadly, sadly, sadly mistaken. Dr. Visick and her group identified 81 fun factors that sort of described from the mouths of the babes who were playing the game, from the mouths of the kids, why they play sport. 81 factors why they play sport. Winning wasn't even in the top half. Winning was number 48 out of 81 as to why kids play sport. have fun, to do something I'm good at, to improve my skills, to stay in shape, to get exercise, playing well as a team, getting along with the teammates, exercise and being active. Those were some of the top remarks from kids. That's why they play. And maybe kids are getting more intuitive. Maybe they're great conversations with their parents, but they're out playing with their pals. That's why they play. Winning wasn't even in the top half of the reasons to play. And number 81, by the way, was getting pictures taken. Kids hate getting pictures taken. So maybe save a few bucks there. Earning medals and trophies was 67. Traveling to new places to play was number 73. Look at these novice hockey teams and these travel baseball teams for 9 and 10 year olds spending tens of thousands of dollars traveling around the world to play tournaments that they could play in their backyard, and the kids would get as much or more out of it than spending all this money. So again, that's not for me to judge. Don't get me wrong. I love those travel trips, and overnight trips are very, very important. But traveling to new places to play was 73 out of a list of 81. And yet it's something that's happening over and over and over. And when we look at some of the other sports where competition and tournaments drive the sports like tennis or skiing, there's a competition every weekend in another town. And at certain levels of development, I question whether that's the right thing to do. As a matter of fact, I don't even question it anymore. I know it's not the right thing to do, but for some reason we've got stuck in this developmental rut where competition is king, and it absolutely is not. Not in any way, shape, or form. Competition at a certain age is very appropriate, but that age has to be, you know, very, very clearly defined. And when you look at the great work done by the Canadian sporting model in their long-term athlete development program, they've done a really, really good job of helping coaches identify what the priorities are for the age group they're working with. For example, for 9 to 12-year-olds, 70% training, that's practice and just fun games and doing things that, you know, teaching skills, to 30% competition, that's 9 to 12 years of age. Think of your son, your daughter, and the games and teams they're on, and how much do they compete, how much do they train, and think of that ratio. 70% training to learn the skills to 30% competition. We overcompete in every single sport. We overcompete, and that's why I say, you know, honestly, I can say this, I think, with great comfort. If you don't agree with me, please get to me. I'd like to hear your opinion on this statement, because I said this in public recently, because I really do think this is a true statement. In the developmental systems, let me know if you agree with this. We're destroying way more talent than we're developing. We really, really, truly are. And that takes me back to the conversation or the point I made at the end of the last segment. You know, being down at the American Baseball Coaches Association, what a great experience. 7,000 dedicated baseball coaches. And we know these types of conferences happen for every sport. We know the baseball coaches get together. The hockey coaches get together. We know the football guys get together as well. We know rugby. We know soccer. They all get together to share information, talk about player development. Can you imagine if you got 8,000 coaches of a sport thinking along the lines of true, true talent development or skill development? Number one, the outcome and the goal of the program wouldn't be to produce elite players. It wouldn't be. It can't be. If your goal is to produce elite players with 9, 10, 11-year-olds, oh my goodness, you've got a long, hard road ahead of you. And so do the kids who are working with you, because that's just not how it happens. If we got the coaches thinking about just proper development and the reason we're developing the young players, boys and girls who just want to get out and play, who might have a little interest in a sport, or maybe they love a sport. If we just took the approach of making sure they're getting better and making sure they're having fun, oh man, I'm telling you what, things would change a lot. Things would change a lot more than worrying about outcomes and winning and competition. Oh boy. And I'm telling you, if you disagree with me here, let me have it. This is a conversation I'm more than ready for. Anytime, I think it's a conversation we need to have. And if I'm wrong, if my thinking is wrong or flawed here, I'd really like to hear from you. But I am telling you, I am very, very convinced at this point, after traveling the world for so many years and working at the developmental levels right up to the highest level of sport, I really, really feel that we are doing a disservice to our young athletes. And I think it's one of the reasons we're seeing the dropout rates, the burnout rates, the number of injuries not just in the developmental levels on the rise, but at the professional levels as well. Specialization has been an absolute disaster. And of course, the great Time article, I think, summed it up really well from late 2017, I believe, how developmental sport became a $15 billion industry. How did developmental sport get to the point where it's generating more revenue than the NFL or Major League Baseball or any of the major sports? Well, because it's big, big business, and it's not about development. I'll tell you that right now, because if we were truly about long-term development, the goal of the programs would be to make sure kids are having fun, make sure they're getting better in a progressive way, and the outcomes just wouldn't matter. We would compete less, and we would develop more. Here's the great spin-off of that model. I believe we're seeing it in Canada for sure, and we're seeing it in certain parts of the U.S. and certain countries around the world who are adapting this type of philosophy. The spinoff of that really smart developmental model where kids are having fun, they're getting better, they're doing age-appropriate work, and we're also identifying and understanding late developers as opposed to early developers, we're seeing more high-performance athletes, more passion for the game. We're seeing more people stay in sport, even just for recreation. Lawyers, accountants, store managers, construction workers playing on the weekend with their pals, playing pickup hockey, people are curling, people are skiing, people are playing for fun. But we're also seeing a spinoff of great, great talent at the world stages. At what cost, though? Is it the dropout rates? Is it the financial stress on families? There's a lot of issues that we can't answer at once here. And again, being aware and identifying the problems are the key components to solving the problems. And I think we're well on our way. And it's going to be conversations like this that really, really, I think, turn it around. So that's my thoughts there. Listen, I really would like to hear from you if you agree or disagree with me. I'd like to get your opinions on this. I'm going to be posting some comments about this conversation on our social media platforms, on Instagram for sure, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube. We are Crush Performance on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and of course, our website, crushperformance.com. You can email me there with any questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have any stories, or if you want us to investigate anything, please let us know. We answer every message that we get. But again, the question is, are we destroying more talent than we're creating in today's landscape and the way the developmental sport is gone? My answer right now, if you were to ask me that question right now, I'd say absolutely 100%. And how powerful are coaches in terms of turning this around? Well, they're the number one. They're the number one priority in my books. We can get the coaches on board thinking like long-term developers. Not only are we going to have more healthy population and more people playing sport, we're also going to have way, way higher number of high performers coming out of the system. So there you go. Anyway, everybody, hey, that's the show for today. Appreciate you guys tuning in. And again, get to the podcast, crushperformance.com. Sign up for the podcast. Share this one. I'd like to get feedback from as many people as possible. And write to us, of course, at crushperformance.com. So coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about the mental game. Again, it's one of the last bastions for pushing human performance forward, I believe. We're going to have a great conversation talking about how we're now able to identify, measure, and see what's going on inside the brain real time. Fascinating conversation. And also the dark side of sport. Match fixing. Our good friend Declan Hill will be joining us to talk about the murder of an investigative reporter in the Middle East, and how it's being tied back to mafia who are fixing matches in certain sports. And we're heading into the Olympics. We're going to find out what exactly we're looking at in terms of match fixing and corruption in sport from Declan Hill coming up in the next few weeks as well. And a lot more as we head into the spring. So that'll do it for today, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. Now get out there and get better.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Leveling the Playing Field Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Today's guest is Stephanie Jouett. Stephanie is the CEO and founder of Actively. That's with two V's. And Actively is basically Tinder for fitness buddies. It's pretty phenomenal. The majority of her users are in the Atlanta area right now. That's because that's the only place that they've really put any marketing effort into. However, it can be used anywhere in the country. You just might not have a ton of matches on it because of there only being, you know, marketing in that one area, but it's a really cool app. She is just such a light. Her background is super cool, at least for me to listen to. I'm a news junkie, and she was at CNN for 5 years as a production assistant or an associate producer on CNN Newsroom and then Crossfire, which was really cool to hear about. And then she decided to create this app. So, you know, we talked about her journey with startup life, and it's a very different episode. It's just not a typical story in our sports world, right? Again, when we think about sports, we often think about the big four that are on TV, and usually it's the men's league. This was, I don't know, it was just really fun for me to hear about some of the challenges that she's overcome and the things that she's had to learn in order to be able to make this app happen.
Leveling the Playing Field with Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.